It's a privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. For those of you who may have gotten the message, Scott Parker is speaking tonight, and that means nothing to me. But when they said it was Pupusa, okay, I got it. So. Now, Scott and I have been carrying the message out of Homeward Bound for quite a few months now, and it's a real pleasure to hear him speak to the guys out of Homeward Bound. He carries a great message to those guys, and they get a lot of hope out of hearing him speak. So, Scott, if you would, please.
Hey, guys, my name is Scott Parker, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And because of a kind and loving God and a sponsor that holds me accountable and keeps pointing me in the direction of that God, I've been sober since May 16th of 2006. No, go ahead. It's all good. I get to start at the, you know, my story, to start at the beginning of it, I started at a very early age, I guess. I had my first beer when I was 5, and I was with a group of kids on our block, and we had this little fort at the end of the road in the field, you know, like little boys are wont to make. And one of the guys had stolen a beer from his dad and some cigarettes, and so we went to the little fort, and we started to drink it. And it got passed around a couple of times, and then we heard a voice getting called, and they didn't know who it was, and we had made little lookout holes in it, you know, whatever army might be invading. So they looked out at a hole, and they found out it was my dad. Well, while they were looking, I downed the rest of the beer. It's their fault for turning their back. And but what I remember about, well, to continue on with that part, guy got mad, punched me in the face, and that would pretty much tell the story of a lot of bar brawls to come later on. So I come out of the deal, and you know, I couldn't tell you the first time I drank a Dr. Pepper or a Coca-Cola or had iced tea, but that was a Miller High Life, and it was the kind that had the pull-off tab. Am I telling my age there? You know, where you could actually pull the whole tab off, and I'm staggering down the street. I mean, you know, one beer to a 5-year-old is, you know, it's pretty detrimental, I guess, and Dad was not too happy, and I caught a whooping for it. But the thing is, I still remembered how I felt when I drank it, and it felt great. I got sick and threw up, caught a whooping, got punched in the face. But I'm not remembering any of that stuff. I thought it felt great to be drunk. And so any time after that, for a while, my parents didn't drink. And any time after that, for a while, if somebody's parents had a beer out and they turned their back, I was grabbing it and drinking it. And I would make up whatever story. If they left the room, oh, it spilled, but I cleaned it up. And so that was kind of my MO for a while there, for, you know, but I laid off for the booze until I was about 12. I held off as long as I could. And it wasn't until 12, really. We had gone overseas with my dad. He traveled a lot, and the trip happened to coincide with the summer at school. We went to the Middle East. Alcohol's illegal there, so if they had it, they don't care how old you are to buy it. And we went to this place to jump off the pier into the Persian Gulf, and they had a little place to get cheeseburgers and whatnot. And I was feeling at that time that separation that, you know, all drunks feel. I didn't fit in with anybody. All the kids were older. They were my brother's friends. I couldn't talk to them. I couldn't communicate with them. I couldn't join in any of the fun other than just being there. And it wasn't until I distinctly remember, we're sitting there waiting to go out to the pier, and I remembered, you know, I'm not feeling cool, but I remember when I was 5, and I drank, and I felt great. So I went inside to the bar, and it was like right up to here, and just put my money on the counter and said, I'll have a draft. And he poured it, and they went jumping out on the pier, and I stayed there drinking. I mean, you know, I was having the fun, they weren't. And that kind of started it. Anytime I felt uneasy, unokay with who and what I was, I know what fixed that, and that was alcohol for me. It always took me to that place where I could finally talk to you, I could feel a part of what was going on, and I wanted that more than anything. And, you know, high school standard stuff. I mean, just partying with my friends on the weekend. A friend of mine's mom was the one that actually bought the beer, and my first exposure to AA, actually, was with them because we had to wait for the party to start when they got back from the AA and Al-Anon meetings. And I was I always kind of wondered, and his mom would drink, and I was like, I don't get the whole AA thing. I thought that if you were an alcoholic, you couldn't drink, but she does, okay, whatever. And alcohol fixed me, and that's what was important to me. It wasn't and nothing else was important. I was a budding musician, and all my heroes were, a few of them are alive, but most of them dead from drinking and other things. Which is why I identified with that part in Bill's story when he's talking to Lois about, you know, men of genius come up with their best ideas while they're drunk. I didn't think I could play the guitar unless I was drunk. I didn't think I could write music unless I was drunk. And so I thought this was all part of it. I'm a guitar player. I get drunk. That's the deal. So I go off to college, and I go to this small Christian college out in West Texas. I got busted there for having alcohol, and I made a deal with them. They said, well, we were going to send you to this Saturday class about drinking and the dangers of drinking. And I said, are you going to tell my parents? And they said, not if you go to the class. And I said, then I'm going to the class. I couldn't care less about the dangers of alcohol because it fixed me. And so I quit college just before they kicked me out. So officially I quit, but man, the axe was coming down. And so I moved to Austin thinking I was special and this hot guitar player that, you know, my grades show how much I cared about anything else but drinking and playing guitar. And I go to Austin and I start working there. I'm a bouncer working on 6th Street, the bar I worked at. You could have, you couldn't get every free drink, but all the Pabst Blue Ribbon and Pearl Light you could drink was for free, and so I did. And and it was at this point in my life where I actually got 12-step for the first time. And it was with a guy that was a friend of mine, that phenomenal guitar player, absolutely incredible, and he was a roommate of mine. And he was, go to AA, done the steps, that kind of thing. And we're sitting there one night at one of their gigs. I always went to their gigs and watched them. And it was one of their breaks. And I had, you know, $25 to my name. And the margaritas were $1.50 a piece. I had done the math before I got there. I had the standard bachelor fridge. There was a bottle of mustard and ketchup and that's it. And my $25 was going for booze. And I'm sitting there drinking, and I used to drink those drinks like that had straws because I really never could keep track of how much I was drinking. And I would just take the straws out and set them on the table. I see that's not a new idea there. And so and Hale comes up to me, and he's sitting there, and he's watching me. And he's been watching me for a while. And he said to me, he goes, and I thought these were the dumbest questions anybody had ever asked me before in my life. He's like, how many have you had to drink tonight? And I was like, well, let me count the straws. And so, no clue. And he goes, well, how many are you planning on having? And I said, well, I got $25, so however much that's going to get me. And this is the first dumb question. Have you ever thought about slowing down? And I genuinely, I looked at him and said, why? Why would I want to do that? And then he said, well, have you ever thought about stopping? And that was the dumbest question I thought I'd ever heard in my life. I was like, why in the hell would I want to quit doing this? This is great. And as time went on, it kind of got me thinking a little bit, and I still had the job as a bouncer, lost my day job at the bookstore. It just didn't work out. They wanted me to be there in the morning. And come on. And I was in three bands at the time. And you have to try to get kicked out of bands. You know, and so soon I was just down to one band, and then it was just me. And And so I thought, maybe, you know, this thing is a problem here. And so I did go to AA, but not very much. And here's why. I went in there, and I sat there, and I've lost my job. The music's going away, which is the only thing I loved at the time besides getting drunk. And I'm sitting in the meeting, and I'm listening to these guys talk and talk and talk and talk. And talk. And they're talking about things like, I can't keep my girlfriend. I lost my job. I can't pay my bills. And I'm like, maybe it's just this meeting. And I can't stand to be here. So I left that one. I went to that one maybe 6 or 7 times. Went to another meeting across town. And it was the same thing there. And they only got about 3 meetings out of me there. And I got up in the middle and walked out because I did not want to hear about this person's crap. I just didn't care. I was here to stop drinking, not listen to their garbage. So I got up and I walked out, and the guy, in fact, comes running out and chasing me, and he's like, where are you going? Where are you going? And I looked him dead in the face, and I said, I already can't pay my bills, can't hold a job, and can't keep a girlfriend, and I'm drinking. I said, you people aren't drinking and can't keep a job, can't keep a girlfriend, and can't pay your bills. Why in the hell should I stay? And I left. And I walked out. And I one thing I said to him before I left was, I said, you know what? I drink too much, and I'll probably die by the time I'm 30. But you people have 30 more years of living miserable, and that's not something I want. And I left. And decided that Austin was just too much for me, so I moved back to the Abilene, which is the place I went to college, thinking, small town, I'll be cool. Not so much. Did you know they have liquor stores in Abilene? And so I was in Abilene, and I drinking again. I mean, just the same stuff over. And I said, okay, I'll try this AA thing again. And so I go back to AA, and I meet one of the coolest people I think I've ever met in my life. And she was a sweet lady, and I don't know what's happened to her now, but she was this Irish nun. And I met her at an AA meeting, and that was the first time I ever heard anything about God, is in that meeting. And I talked to her outside beforehand and just thought she was the coolest thing in the world. And the Catholic Church had moved her to Abilene, to a small town, for the same reason I moved there. And so I'm talking to her, and they mention God, and I just joke around with her, lean over next to her and say, well, this is about God. You got this nailed. You know? You know? And so, and we become, her name is Catherine, and I wish I knew what happened to her. I got to go make it out to Abilene and see what she's doing. And anyway, what happened one time is Catherine called me at about midnight one night and said, hey, I'm at this bar, and I'm about to drink, and I need help. And I said, what can I do? And she said, just please come down here. And I said, okay. So I went down there, and I hadn't had a drink in about maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so, and you know, I was ready. But I was going in there thinking, all right, I'm just going to go get her. We're going to leave, and we're going to go to IHOP or something and get out of there. Well, I open up the front door to the bar, and that smell, you know, the stale smoke and booze, and ZZ Top is playing on the jukebox. And I'm like, home, you know? And so I walked in, and I found Catherine sitting there, and she's sitting at the bar, and she's not having the good time I am. She's staring at a shot and just staring at it and staring at it. And I walk up next to her, and I sit down, and I say, all right, what do we do now? And she was like, I don't know. I said, we could leave. And she said, well, I'm not ready to leave yet. And I said, all right, neither am I. And so she had a shot, and I thought, well, to be fair, I better get one too. And so I got a shot, and we're sitting there, and she finally says, we're going to drink, aren't we? And there's a distinct difference between her experience and my experience. She's scared shitless of taking that drink, and I'm excited because the pain's about to go away. We take the shot, and it is ease and comfort right away for me. We order another one, and she starts praying before each shot. and she's crying at the same time. She's praying and crying, and the prayer she's saying is that she hopes this is the last one. And I didn't feel like that yet. So it had somebody brought me a message at that point, how it should have been brought, I don't know. I doubt I would have taken it at that point because alcohol was still working for me. It was still solving my problem. It was still my solution. It was still what I did when I had a bad day. It's what I did when I had a good day. And with her, it wasn't like that. She wanted to stop desperately. And I just wanted the pain to stop desperately, and that was the only way I knew how. And so we both get hammered, and she didn't have a car, so I drive her home. And I drop her off, and I saw her. I went to a couple meetings after that, and we got drunk one more time together. And I thought it was kind of cool getting drunk with a nun. I mean, you know... That's why I laugh every time. You know those calendars that have, like, nuns doing bad things? And I'm like, that's why I chuckle every time, because, I mean, I was part of that. And so, oh, boy. And so, so I don't know what happened to Catherine. God bless her. I really hope that finally a recovered alcoholic came across her path and offered her a solution to what the deal is. The next several years of my life are very standard alcoholic crap that happens. Still can't keep a job. I got fired from Home Depot. Apparently they don't like it when, again, you're supposed to be at work at 3 and you get up 3:30, 3:45 and drive their forklifts drunk. They don't like that. And I got fired because I was screaming at my boss because I was going to get written up again for being late. And I thought that was just unfair, you know. And at that point, I had moved around a lot. I've lived several towns in Texas, even moved to New Jersey, thinking every move or the girl I'm moving there for is going to fix me. And none of it ever does. It's always the same. The same idiot that left one town shows up in the next one. And so no matter where I went, there I was. And my parents, living in Houston, fired from Home Depot, they're sick of my junk. And they did the best thing for me, and they kicked me out of the house. And I didn't have anywhere to go except to the girlfriend that was living in San Antonio. Moved out there, ended up getting promoted, and moved to Dallas. Through a coworker of where I worked at that place, knew somebody that goes to this group. I try not to stay drunk long because that's not even the good stuff. It's just, so I met this person that goes to this group, and we're hanging out and we're friends and we're doing whatever. And I, you know, several times I'm like, hey, let's go get a beer. She's like, no, I don't drink at all. I'm like, oh, you can watch. I mean, you know. Because it's happening, but you know, whether you're there or not. But and so, so what ends up happening? And the funny thing is, I thought I had this girl fooled, and I'd sworn off twice to her. She'd call me while I was on the couch hurting. I'd taken antidepressants again, because that's gonna solve the whatever. And drinking and Wellbutrin. Not a good idea, but still didn't stop me. I decided to stop taking the Wellbutrin because that was really interfering with how much I could drink. So anyway, I swore off twice to this girl, and finally she says, she tells me after I'm asking her to go out to get a beer, she says, well, I can't drink because I'm allergic to alcohol. And the thing that kicked me off that she was an AA was because that's what they told me to tell people way back when in Austin. Tell them you're allergic. But the thing is, they didn't explain what the hell that meant. That was just something I was supposed to tell somebody when I wasn't supposed to go drink with them. And anyway, so she brought me here, and I mean, thank God for this group. And thank God for the fact that people here do the steps and carry this message, because y'all had one meeting. And if I had to listen to people's crap, she told me how many people came, and I'm like, oh. And there's 150 people. I don't want to listen to 150. I'm going to have to get drunk just to deal with the meeting. And so, I said, I don't want to hear people bitch and moan about their lives, because I really don't care. And she's like, that's not what our meeting is like. Just come. Just come to one. And I said, okay. So I came, and I went to a foundation meeting, and I'm sitting there listening, and I'm telling her that I'm going to be a good supportive friend for her. And that was a lie. Because my life is falling apart. I'm about to lose the job I have then. You know, things aren't going well. And the thing is, when I would stop drinking, life never got better. Life never got better when I quit drinking. It got worse. And that's... me without a solution is an ugly thing. Ask my parents. Because, you know, the times when I'm living with them, I mean, why do you think they threw me out? I was either staying out late and getting drunk or screaming at them because I was trying to not drink, and I couldn't deal with anything. And those poor people, you know, I put them through hell, and they still love me. And, wow, I love those people to death. Anyway, so I get here, and I'm in this foundation meeting, and I'm thinking again, I better hear something good, because I'm glad one person's talking instead of everybody needing to unload their junk. But she started talking about the big book and the steps and what they meant. She talked about step one, about what powerless is, explained the allergy to me, explained the reason when I start drinking and I can't stop is because I have an allergy to alcohol. It's because this craving that I break out into is why alcoholics are powerless over alcohol, why I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. I'm sitting there just reading it thinking, boy, yeah, it is. My life is not unmanageable because I lose jobs and can't keep a relationship and can't pay bills. My life is unmanageable because I can't stay away from booze. That's why my life is unmanageable. You know, I would tell you I drank for all different kinds of reasons. I was molested until the age of 7. That girl I moved to New Jersey for got an abortion and told me after. I didn't even know she was pregnant. I used all these excuses. I was picked on growing up. Poor me. You know, I use all these excuses to drink, but that's not why I drink. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. I drink because I am powerless over alcohol, and my life is unmanageable. Alcoholics drink, and I am. So I did. And that whole meeting, I couldn't stop thinking about that. I vaguely heard about step 2 and 3 in that meeting, but I couldn't stop sitting there thinking about... my butt was nailed to the chair. I was like, wow, I really am an alcoholic. I truly am. And I can't do anything about it. Until she said that the big book says I can go try some controlled drinking. The week or a month, it doesn't... for me, 10 minutes. And I've got a good idea. You know, I've got a plan working. And so after that meeting that night, we went out and had dinner with a couple other friends. And I dropped her off back at her car, and I went straight to the Flying Saucer. And I said, okay, controlled drinking, this is it. I'm going to test myself, and we're going to see how it all goes. I'm going to have one beer. Well, but I have that Flying Saucer membership card thing, and I'm trying to get that gold plate on the wall, and you can apply 3 beers to that in one night. So 3 beers, and we're good. So I decided on 3. And so I'm in the bar, and I start to drink. And I'm drinking, and I'm chatting with the folks next to me, because I can now. And then I stopped and I thought, oh, I was supposed to stop at 3. And I was like, I asked the bartender, I was like, how many have I had? And he goes, 9. And I went, what the hell? Let's go. I mean, I've already blown it. Might as well blow it all the way, you know? And so I got good and hammered then. And there are several more benders that come along. And remember Catherine and how she felt when she drank? It's on my birthday. And again, I'm going into this whole thing with a buddy of mine thinking two drinks, two beers. I'll even do beer. I'm not even going to do bourbon. Bourbon was my favorite thing on the planet. That was what I loved to drink. And I was like, I'll just do beer. I'm not going to do bourbon. And I stuck to two beers. It was the bourbon after those two beers that was the problem. And but the thing is, when I got drunk then, when it fixed me before, it wasn't working anymore. And I'm this angry, pissed off person because I'm trying to get relief and I'm not getting it anymore. I don't know how much alcohol it would have taken to get to that point like I felt when I was 12 or when I was 5. And I tried to get there a bunch and it just didn't get me there anymore. So much as the waitress knew me from high school. This is back in my hometown where we're at. And she comes up and she says, "You still drink like you did in high school?" And she said, "Well, you drink more." And I'm like, "All right, two more shots." And she comes and she says, "Well, don't you think you've had enough already? I mean," and I looked this woman dead in the eye and I said, "I didn't ask for a commentary on my life. I told you to bring me two more bourbons." And that came out and she called me a few names, and which she should have. And I got drunk then. And I'm staring at these bourbon, these two shots she brought, and I'm like, I don't want to drink them. And then I remembered Catherine. And I remembered what I was told here. And it only took me about another month of trying the experiment again. Because then I was too embarrassed. I was too embarrassed to admit that I was really an alcoholic. And I got drunk again. And the thing is, when I got drunk at this point over the last several years, I didn't want to be alive anymore. And I would pray when I was drunk that God, don't let me wake up from this one. And then get pissed off in the morning when I did. And I'd had enough of that. And it was y'all's smiling faces that I remembered when I came to the last time I had a drink. Because y'all were happy. Y'all lived life. You weren't hiding from life. And I wanted that. I wanted that desperately. So I called my friend back up and said, "Can I come to the meeting again?" And she said, "You can come anytime you want." And I did. And I came. And again, my mind is already starting. You're making too big a deal. The headache's gone. You know, you're making too big a deal out of it. We started reading stuff in the Big Book about leading a double life. And I was... That was me. Because while I might be able to come off as somebody that was okay some of the time, I wasn't. And so I decided to get a sponsor. And I talked to this guy with a big, gray, bushy beard, looks like Papa Smurf. And it was a 3-minute conversation. And the friend of mine had been dragging people up to me. "You want to talk to that person?" I'm like, "No." You know, and I was, again, I was angry, very angry. And I was, "What about this person?" "No." And then kind of looked over and saw Myers. And I said, "What about that guy?" "You want to talk to Myers? Do you want to talk to Myers?" And I'm like, "Sure." And I go over there and he, and I don't know if y'all were here for birthday night. It was in the closet back there. And I walked up and he said, and... My friend said, "Myers, Scott, Myers." And Myers goes, "What's your deal, booze or drugs?" And I said, "Alcohol." He goes, "Do you want to quit?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Do you want to quit forever?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Okay." And then, you know, I didn't say anything after that. I didn't know what to say. And he walked off, and I asked Wendy, who is one of my best friends on the planet, I asked her that night. I was like, "Do you have that Myers guy phone number? I want to talk to him and ask him to be my sponsor. Is he good?" You know, I don't know who he was. And and Wendy said, "Well, did you hear God through him?" And I was like, "I know when I talk to him. I don't know. I guess so." And I had heard what he said during the meeting and his comments. And she said, "Call him." And he left the 10-minute long message on his voicemail. "Hey." This is Scott, and I talked to you last night in the meeting. I don't know if you remember me or not. Big guy, goatee. Would you you know, the whole be my sponsor, and he called me, and he called me the next morning and said something that kind of shocked me. He goes, "Again, are you done for good and all?" And I said, "Yes." He goes, "Good, because if you're not, we'll dust your butt off and let you go get finished and come back when you are. Meet me Thursday." Yes, sir. And so I did, and we started from there. And working the steps from there, he made sure I understood what being an alcoholic was, making sure I understood what step one was all about. He said, "How do you feel about God?" I said, "I'm okay with God." He said, "Good, done with step two." You know, and we did this third step prayer, and then as soon as we got done with the third step prayer, he handed me my four step sheets. And he said, "You have a week." And I had it done in about 3 days. He had gone out of town. And I, you know, we should all work the steps the same, but my experience with the steps, I didn't get the third step promises right away. And here's why. Because I wouldn't have been able, if I'd have gotten any relief whatsoever at that point, I wouldn't have been able to think of who I resented. Because believe me, at that point, my mindset, it was not hard. I hate this guy. I hate this guy. I hate them. You know, and it was not hard for me at all to make that list of people I resented and why. I'll tell you all day long why they're jerks. And I was not feeling all right. My solution's gone and I'm scared. And I called him one day when I was at work, and I said, "Myers, I don't feel good, man. I'm going nuts and I want to drink." He said, "Well, then go drink." I said, "I don't want to drink. I want to know how to not do that." He said, "When do you get off of work?" I said, 5:00. He said, "Go to the 24-hour club." I said, "What am I going to do there?" And he said, "You're going to talk to another alcoholic or another, you just talk to somebody." I was like, "What do I tell him? You know, I've only got, I think, well, that conversation actually happened. I only had like 3 or 4 days. And I said, "What am I going to tell him? I've only got like 4 days." He goes, "That's 3.5 days longer than most of those guys have. Go tell him about it." You know, and I said, "Okay." And I went, and it was magic. It was great. I wanted more of it. I'm still grindy. I'm listening to Melanie do the steps, and I distinctly remember this. And I'm listening to her do the steps, and she's talking about 8 and 9. And the freedom that comes from 9, and how I'm feeling then on page 52, those bedevilments, how I'm feeling then is step 9, a lot of that stuff slips away. And I didn't believe her. And I'm staring a hole through her, through the whole meeting, and she comes up after, she goes, "Scott, are you okay?" And I went, "No! I'm not okay! Thank you for asking!" And she was like, "Well, how far have you gotten?" And I was like, "I'm waiting to do my fifth step." She goes, "Well, good. Just do your fifth step." She goes, "Why are you so angry?" And I said, "I think you're full of shit." Because, you know, the third step stuff didn't happen. And so if the fifth step stuff didn't happen, I was gone, right? Nothing could have been further from the truth. I met Myers that Tuesday. We did my fifth step. And through the whole thing, I'm starting to kind of feel it's starting to go away. And I'm like, I'm the one here that caused all of this. They're not the ones. It was because I was trying to get what I wanted when I wanted from them. And I did whatever I had to do that. And they got sick of my crap. And so when I left that, you know, I had this whole shift going on. And there's this magical hour that you do after your fifth step. At least it was for me. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about the first 5 steps. What did I forget? You know, did I leave somebody off? Have I been thorough? Do I know my truth in step one? Am I willing to believe that there's a power greater than me that can do this? Step 3, to do the decision to get through the rest of the steps. All right, I've got that decision down. Was I thorough on this 4th step? Did I tell Myers everything in the 5th step? And as I'm doing this, it's this weight is being lifted, and at the end of that hour, I did 6 and 7, and started writing people that weren't on my 4th step, that list is all, step eight list already done from that. Because of the way my mind had changed, it wasn't hard for me to think of people that I had stepped on that I didn't resent. Well, I screwed this guy over. I owe this guy money. And I screwed this guy over and this person, and I really hurt that girl. And my whole outlook on life started changing drastically. And I went from this guy to just stand there and just, what? You know? To just feeling free. Feeling free. I could look people in the eye. It was my fault. And guess what? Because of these 12 steps, I can do something about me. I can get connected to a power that can change that. And I wanted more of that. Man, I came in halfway through the meeting on Tuesday after doing my hour, and I'm grinning, and I'm happy to see everybody instead of wishing I'll just get the hell out of my way. And so I wanted more. And Meyer says, amends. Time to do amends and step 10. I said, okay. So I took a Friday off from work and a Monday off from work. And I drove out Thursday night after work down. And I called people that I could get a hold of. Everybody could get a hold of from the Tuesday when I did my amends that Friday. I'd known five people in Dallas at that point, so I made those amends before that. And then I called the people and set up appointments in Austin, Houston, and San Antonio. And I drove down to Austin, met with everybody there that I could find. Drove to Houston, met with everybody there, and then came back up through San Antonio. And on that trip to Houston, you know, it was a week after I'd done. Anyway, it was Father's Day weekend, and we're having dinner with everybody, my family, my brother, his wife, and her folks, and everything. And I don't know exactly when the obsession to drink left, but that's when I recognized it was gone, because everybody there's drinking and having a great time. I'm drinking Dr. Pepper and having a great time, and I realize in the middle of the meal, and I start laughing. And my brother leans over and says, "What's so funny?" I'm like, "All y'all are drinking, and I don't care." and he was like, "That's great, man." And it's just been like that ever since. Meyer's step 11 right out of the book. You know, every morning, it's the highlight of my day. I mean, in the morning when I get up, I follow the directions right out of the book. As soon as I can have a conscious thought when I wake up, I think, you know, for my thinking to be divorced from selfish, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And then I get out of bed and start my morning, and I'm thinking about my day ahead. And then I get on my knees and I pray. And then I pray for direction. And then I sit and I be quiet and shut up and listen for the direction. And that's that time in the morning, I'm telling you, if it's the coolest moment, because it's just when it's me and God and nothing else. And I enjoy that time the most, because I get off the couch or wherever I'm meditating from, and it's like I'm floating at that point. It's just the coolest feeling in the world. Doing 12-step work, step 12, you're missing out if you're not doing it. I'm telling you, it's the coolest thing in the world. To get a guy that comes in that was just as scared as me or even more so, and to say, "You know what, bud, it's not how life has to be. Do you want it?" And if he says, "Yeah," you take him through it. And if he says, "No, here's my number, call me when you're done." You know? But and all sorts of cool things start happening in your life. And it was a time, I was 2 months sober, and Myers was doing the steps down at the Triangle Group. And we met up here on Thursday before the meeting and all drove down there together. And it was on these Thursdays. Don't tell. We've all signed things saying we're not really going to divulge what was said in the car, but that's where I got the nickname Papusa from, by the way. So we're in the car, but you know the time we're having in the car is the greatest. I'm laughing so hard I'm crying, and it's me, Dale Myers, and a couple of guys that aren't here anymore. God be with them. But they it was the coolest time. And on the last trip back, I'm sitting in the front seat with Myers, and I looked over at him and I said, "You know, thanks, man." And he's like, "For what?" And I said, "Every drunk I had, every time I drank, this is what I was trying to get. This feeling right here. And this is better than anything I've ever felt before. And all I can say is that it gets better after that. I've had plenty of times with friends here carrying the message with Dale and Brad and Myers and all Wendy and all the other John. There's a bond there you get with those people. And it's the coolest thing you've ever felt in your life. It's this closeness and this camaraderie that before, because I've got this spiritual thing that's I'm disconnected from everything, that's taken care of now because of these steps. And I can have relationships, real relationships with people. I'm not trying to take from them. You know, that's done. I can actually give to a relationship and not expect anything in return. And to have those relationships with people are the coolest thing. It's the best. And it's hard for me to think of cool things to talk about what my life is like now, because there's been just so many. And starting back to school. Fourth time's a charm. You know? You know? So I'm still, I mean, and, you know, and about that, I lost my job, that job that I got promoted and moved up here on. I lost my job. You know, a girl I cared about very dearly, it didn't work out. I didn't drink. Because the solution to my problems now is in helping somebody else and getting out of the way and letting God take care of all that stuff. I lost my job. Myers has been jabbing at me to go back to school forever. So I prayed and I said, "God, okay, if it's your will, I want to go back to school. And hopefully I'll get a job where I can afford to do that." And I was manhandling it, to be honest with you. I had the kung fu grip on it. And I it's going to work out. This is going to do here. And I called Myers, and I was like, "This job thing just ain't working out, man." And and he said something real quick. He said, "God either is or he isn't. Make your decision and go on from there." "All right, I'll talk to you later." You know, and that was the deal. And so I hit my knees and I said, "God, this isn't my decision, and whatever you want to happen, let it happen. If I'm supposed to go back to school, great. If I'm not, fine. It's up to you." 2 days later, a friend of mine, company he works for, calls up and says, "Hey, I have some job opening here, and you know, they have tuition reimbursement, and go check out the schedule and just come in." And I said, "Okay." And so I knew the schedule was going to be evening time, whatever. And I said, "Myers, what do I keep? I don't want to miss. What do I do?" He goes, "You have a commitment on Wednesday. All I want you, one meeting a week and one commitment a week. That's your job." And I said, "Okay." So I go in. My commitment is on Wednesday nights at Homeward Bound. My days off are Wednesdays and Thursdays. I mean, there's my meeting a week and my commitment. And the schedule was perfect for me to go back to school. So I took it. And again, like I said, it's things like that happen all the time. When you truly do put your life in God's hands, He's going to take care of it. Those third step promises don't stop coming true once you start doing the fourth step. Perform your work well and God will give you what you need. And it's been my experience with that. You know, page, one of the coolest things in the book, page 100. It says here, you know, in the middle of that first paragraph there, it says, "When we look back, we realize that things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And it's the truth. If these promises didn't come true, I wouldn't be here. No recovered alcoholic would be here if these promises didn't come true. And the thing is this, I'm not special. I'm not even that smart. You know, I'm just a drunk that shut up and took direction and did what was out of this book and was so sick of the way my life was, it was either going to end or something was going to get better. And there's nothing I could do in my own power to make it get better. God's the one that does that. I just follow directions. I do what the book says, and God takes care of the rest. And if you're here tonight for the first time or new in sobriety, early on, and you're kind of wondering or on the fence what to do, man, get a sponsor that's done the work and ask them. The 12 steps says we've had a spiritual experience as the result of doing these steps. Ask that person, have you had a spiritual experience as the result of doing the steps? They've got to qualify you. They should. They've got to qualify you to see if you're the real deal alcoholic. Qualify them to see if they're a qualified sponsor. And if they say, yes, I have, then don't leave them alone. Tell them you want it. And because if you've had the spiritual experience, you know to keep it, you got to give it away. And if they're worth their salt, they'll give it away. Because that's where all the fun is. Going to Homeward Bound and the 24-hour club, nothing I love more. But those places have saved my bacon. I'm glad the 24-hour club is open 24 hours a day. You know? And there's been plenty of times. It's 11 o'clock at night, and I'm like, I got to go. And I head down there, and it never fails. There's always one guy that wanders in that's hurting, and he doesn't know what to do. And so I just talk to him, to get to know him, tell him my story. You know, I'm not there to take his inventory and go, well, because you drink, you're da-da-da-da-da. That's not my job. My job is to go, this is how I drank. This is how my life was before. But it's not that way now. Are you interested? Good thing is, his answer isn't his answer is his answer. My sobriety is dependent on me sitting there offering it. Not whether he takes it. God bless him if he does. But if he doesn't, that's okay too. You know? Hopefully somebody else can talk to him that he'll get it. You know, again, thank y'all. Dr. Bob's story, I love it. I'm going to end with this because it sums it up in that last paragraph, which is where the good stuff is. Can we delete that part? Anyways, the last paragraph there, and this is again what I would say again to the newcomer. Dr. Bob sums it up in a paragraph, the whole thing I've been trying to do this time I've been up here. It says, if you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in this book, I feel sorry for you. If you think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that's your own affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking for good and all, not one day at a time, for good and all, we know that we have an answer for you. It never fails. If you go about it with one half the zeal you have been in the habit of showing when you're getting another drink, your Heavenly Father will never let you down. And that's the truth. Thank you all so much. I love every single one of you.